Just a little bit of a review of where we've been for the past couple weeks. 2 weeks ago, we looked in the scriptures to determine a concise definition of worship. And we, from both the Old and New Testament, if you recall, and specifically John chapter 4, defined worship as a spiritual response, a response of our spirits to God as a result of understanding biblical truth about God. And so we came to understand that really worship is not limited to Sunday morning. God is concerned about every choice we make, everything that we allow in our lives, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Everything that we do as Christians is either a right response of our spirits, a right response of worship, or an improper response. So that kind of set the stage for us then in the discussion. As I mentioned, we're laying kind of some foundational material here first, and then we're going to talk about music as worship in all of life. We're going to begin that discussion today, really, and then we'll end with worship, music as worship specifically in a congregational setting. That'll be the last couple sessions. Last week, we focused on particularly our task as Christians being an active pursuit of holiness, so that every choice we make in our lives is one of trying to please the Lord. And so hopefully you took from that the music, even the secular music that you listen to, is important. There's really, for a Christian, there's no such thing as something that's neutral. Everything that we allow in our lives should be for the purpose of our sanctification, the benefit of others, and the glory of God. And so if you recall, we looked in 1 Corinthians 6 through 10 and discerned some principles there that Paul applied to the issue of meat offered to idols that I think can be applicable to the issue of music. Those four principles that really I'd like to frame our discussion over the next several weeks. We're asking the question, what kind of music should a Christian have, should we as Christians have in our lives? And really, if we frame the discussion with those questions in mind, is it actually beneficial for your holiness? Does it risk failing to bring God glory? Is it going to cause someone else to stumble in a sin? And does it control you? If we allow those kinds of questions to frame our discussion, I think that will go a long way to help us come to biblical conclusions. Now, as we began to apply those four questions to the issue of music last week, I mentioned that where the discussion of music falls in biblically is in passages that talk about communication. So we've got passages that say, let no corrupt communication come out of your mouth, but only that which is good to the use of edifying. So this week, we're really going to focus down on that issue and ask the question, how does music communicate? How does music carry meaning? Now, there are some who will say, and I'm finding that it's fewer and fewer people who say this, but there have been some in the past who have said, music doesn't communicate anything. It's completely neutral. It doesn't express anything. It's just a neutral means of entertainment. Now, as I said, I'm finding, thankfully, that fewer and fewer people are trying to argue that anymore. What's interesting is that it's only, if you look at who has argued that in the past, it's only professing Christians who are trying to defend some sort of pop music that have said that. Really, the pop musicians themselves, unbelievers, we're going to look at that a little bit today, have always said, yeah, our music communicates, and they've even told us what their music does communicate. But some people have tried to say, and we'll deal with that a little bit today, some people have tried to say, no, music doesn't express anything, it doesn't communicate anything, it's neutral, therefore God doesn't care what I listen to. And so what I would like to look at today is, well, how is that true? How does music communicate to us? How does it carry meaning? Because if it does carry meaning, which I'm going to argue that it does, if music carries meaning, then it's important that we evaluate that meaning to see if it fits with the biblical worldview. And if the particular meaning that this given form of music communicates, if it doesn't fit with Christian living, then we should abstain from it. If it does, if it communicates something that actually benefits us, glorifies God, causes us to be more holy, then that's something that we can allow in our Christian lives. So we're getting down to the very, very specific now, and this is probably where some of you have wanted to be for the past couple weeks. How does music carry meaning? Now, this is a very difficult topic. I heard a statement a couple weeks ago that fits perfectly. Talking about music is like dancing about architecture. It just doesn't fit. The art of architecture, it doesn't go with dancing. You can't dance about architecture. Well, music, trying to explain through words how music communicates, it just doesn't work right. Music is supposed to be an abstract form of communication that touches the emotions. We're not supposed to be able to, in very clear and articulate and exact words, discuss how music means. It's just the medium doesn't fit that kind of discussion. But we're going to try anyway. And so you may get frustrated and oh, I just can't, what was he talking about? I'm going to try to be very methodical and be crystal clear here, but it's going to be difficult, especially if you have no musical background whatsoever. Having some music, playing an instrument, having some music theory, that kind of thing helps. It's not necessary, and that's what I'm going to argue today. It's not necessary to have a music theory basis to understand what music communicates, because I think it communicates in a way that we all can really discern. But it's still not an easy, not a real clear discussion. So we're gonna go point by point. Here is a song. And in this case, we're gonna start with talking about a song with a text. Okay, some music obviously doesn't have lyrics, and so we'll talk about that. But here is a song with a lyric, and we want to know, okay, what does this communicate? And next week, we'll then say, all right, based on what this communicates, is it acceptable for a Christian? We're not even going to get there today, probably. We're just going to try to get to the bottom of how does music with a lyric, and then music without a lyric, how does that carry meaning? So first of all, let's talk about the textual content. Let's set the music aside for a moment and talk about just the words. Okay, so you've got a song. It may be a sacred song, maybe a secular song, something you hear on the radio, Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, no matter what it is. Okay, we've got music and lyrics. What about the textual content? So given that we have a song with words, we can divide the levels of meaning into four general categories. And that's what we're going to work through. The first level of meaning is carried through the textual content itself. This is the easiest, most basic level of meaning. What do the words say? So, Mary had a little lamb. What's the meaning carried in that text? Well, it's about a girl who has a lamb, and the fleece is white as snow, and everywhere that Mary goes, the lamb goes. Okay, that meaning is easy, right? It's just the propositional truth carried in the text. Now, we're going to apply this more specifically next week. You may be saying, well, that's obvious. You know, the words of a song carry meaning. But I am amazed at how many Christians are satisfied with listening to music where the clear propositional truth of the song is unbiblical. I mean, that you know, we're going to get to some stuff that's like, oh, boy, how do I wrestle through this? But folks, this level of meaning is very clear. And if we've got a song, and it's like the lyrics say, worship the devil, worship the devil, well, it's pretty easy to understand what that means, right? And is that acceptable for a Christian to listen to? If the lyrics of the song carry a very clear meaning that's unbiblical, well, then obviously we shouldn't have that as part of our lives, whether it's devil worship or immorality, you know, talking about sexuality or, you know, violence or drugs or, you know, those kinds of things. And again, you're saying, well, yeah, it's obvious, but I know a lot of Christians who listen to music where the words are clearly anti-God. I remember growing up in a Christian school, and we'd hear preaching against contemporary Christian music. And I remember sitting there thinking, you know, my friends don't need that as much as just they're listening to rock music with terrible lyrics. I mean, that's the stuff that people are listening to. So we're going to apply this more specifically, but this level of meaning is very clear. What do the words actually say? Now, the second layer of meaning then goes beyond just the propositional truth and goes into the poetic form of the text. Do you realize that poetry, the poetic form, the way that something is said, communicates something? How words and phrases are composed governs how the text communicates to the emotions. We take that propositional truth then, okay, so it's a song about Mary and her lamb. We put it in poetry, and it takes it to another level of communication, another level of meaning. And in this way, meaning can never be separated from the form in which it's communicated. So we have a text about a certain propositional truth, but the way that it is said communicates something. The way that the words are phrased, the way that it's put into a poetic form, or the metaphors that are used. Let me give you an example of this. I'm going to give you some words that are nearly synonymous with one another. But what I want you to notice is that the second word, just the word by itself, has connotations, have flavors that differ a little bit from the first word. Like this. Listen to this one. Boy, fellow. Nearly synonymous words, but there's just a little bit of variance of communication, and it goes beyond just, here is a young male, right? Or how about this? Unkind individual, jerk. Okay? They mean the same thing, but you know, if you walk up to someone and say, you know, you're kind of an unkind individual, well, that means one thing. If you walked up to someone and say, you know, you're a jerk, that it means the same thing in terms of propositional truth, but just the flavor, the connotation of the word, it has a little bit of variance to it. How about this? Homeless individual, bum. Right? Same basic meaning, but there's a little bit of a variance to what it's saying. The terms mean the same thing propositionally, but they have different connotations. So when we're talking about just the meaning of the lyric, we're talking about the denotative truth. It's just clear. Mary had a little lamb. It's about a girl and a lamb. But when we talk about the poetry, the way that the words are phrased, and this is true even with prose. You know, a good writer is going to phrase things in a certain way to have a certain flavor or connotation to the writing. That there we're talking about connotations, connotative truth. Even poetic, the way the poetry is, can communicate something. Let me give an example. Here is a poem, and it's hard to separate the content from the form, but as I read this, try to ignore what the words are saying and just listen to how it's said and ask yourself what is being communicated in this poem, all right? Imagine a skunk who proposes to his true love surrounded by roses. It may turn out just fine when she falls for his line, but I wonder if flowers have noses. So here we have a text that's clearly silly, right? And it's set to a poetic form that communicates that silliness, right? You may not even understand the words, and it would communicate silliness. Da 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 da. Now, what poetic form is that? Anybody know? It's a limerick, right? A limerick inherently by the poem itself communicates a kind of light skippiness. I only say that to say that the way something is phrased, the way it's set poetically, can communicate. Here's another example. See how this poetic form, the meter, the rhyme, the rhythm of the text, see how this communicates to you. Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love which alters when it alteration finds or bends with the remover to remove. Oh no, it is an ever-fixed mark that looks on tempests and is never shaken. It is the star to every wandering bark, whose worth unknown, although his height be taken. Love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come. Love alters not with his brief hours and weeks, but bears it out even to the edge of doom. If this be error and upon me proved, I ever writ, nor no ever man ever loved. Now, what poetic form is that? That's a sonnet form. That the poetry, the rhythm, the meter, it just communicates a serious, reverent topic, right? The point is this. Certain ways of writing poetry, which that's what hymns are, that's what songs are, right? They're poetry. Certain ways of writing poetry, taking out the propositional content, what the words mean, just communicates either a light skippiness or a somberness or a seriousness or a stateliness. Just the way that things are phrased can communicate certain ways. The point is this. Some poetic forms simply cannot treat serious topics seriously. For instance, the limerick. I searched and searched for a limerick that had a serious topic. And I couldn't find one. I even tried to write one, and you just can't do it because a limerick communicates a kind of light fluffiness. And some poetic forms are more capable of treating serious subjects. Let me give you another example. This one may help. I'm trying to give you some examples because, again, I know this is unless you've studied literature or studied music, this is a difficult concept to get your mind around. We hear a song and we think, all right, what do the words mean? But beneath that, it's communicating something to us that we may not be able to really immediately understand. Think for a moment about, you all know the poem, "'Twas a Night Before Christmas." Hey, let me read you the first couple lines. And notice not only what it's saying, but how it's saying it, all right? "'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse." Okay, so how I read that, you know, I was a little bit biased in how I read it, but the way that it was, the meter kind of made me read it that way. Da 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 da. This is written in what's called anapestic feet. It's like weak, weak, strong, 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 weak, weak, strong. Is that clear? Understand that? So it kind of gives this what is the poem "'Twas a Night Before Christmas" about? A silly, fun topic, right? Jolly old Saint Nick. Okay, so the author of this poem wrote it in a certain meter that communicated a kind of skippiness. Da 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 da. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, what if I changed the meter of that same? So I take the same propositional truth. What's the propositional truth? It's Christmas Eve. We're in a house, and nothing is stirring. That's the basic meaning, right? But just with this da 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 da, we already know, even though the words don't say it yet, that something fun and light is going to happen. But what if I changed it? What if I changed it to instead of anapestic feet, what if I used iambic feet? So instead of weak, weak, strong, weak, weak, strong, weak, weak, strong, weak, weak, strong, what if I changed it to weak, strong, weak, strong, weak, strong, weak, strong? Listen to this. So it's not anymore, "'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse." Now listen to it. "'Twas Christmas Eve, the house was still, and not a creature stirred." So instead of da, 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 now we have da, 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 da. So and we don't know what's coming next. We still know it's Christmas Eve and there's silence. But when it was set to bum, 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 we knew probably something light and silly and fun is going to happen. And sure enough, that's what happens. But when we hear this, "'Twas Christmas Eve, the house was still, and not a creature stirred," we might think something sinister is going to happen or something serious. Suspense. Doesn't it communicate suspense or seriousness rather than silliness? The point is, again, the poetic form of a text communicates, has powerful influence on the way that the text communicates. And it's not something you may have ever acknowledged in your mind before, but beneath the surface, it was communicating something to you. You kind of sensed a silliness coming, or you sensed a seriousness coming. You look in a typical textbook on poetry or hymn writing, and they will say, use anapestic feet, ba 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 ba, to communicate lightness, and use iambic feet, da 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 da, to communicate. Well, I have here one writer says a stately, the iambic pattern is stately and noble, and is best used for those texts which are propositional. Most hymns are written in a form of iambic feet instead of da 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 da. More of them are written da 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 because we're treating biblical subjects. Okay, so the only point here is we have to go beyond just the mere words. We've got to go to the communication of the poetry itself to understand what a text is meaning. When we're evaluating what kind of music pleases the Lord, or no, we're not even there yet. What does it mean? That's what we're asking. We got a song with a lyric. What does it mean? Most people will say, what do the words say? And that you have to start there, and unfortunately some Christians don't even ask that question. You have to start there, okay, so it's not talking about something unbiblical, okay. But we got to go beyond that and ask, how are the words, what is it, when I just sit back and listen to the words, what does it communicate beyond just what the words are saying in a propositional way? Because poetry, the words themselves, the sounds of the words, sounds put together, all of that communicates something. So this is important when we evaluate what music means and whether it what it means is compatible with biblical Christianity. We shouldn't just evaluate the propositional truth. We've got to go beyond that and ask, what does it mean? Now, the meaning may not be unbiblical, but then we have to ask, and we'll do this next week, is it appropriate for the given context? So if I want to be silly, if I'm on Wednesday night before Kids for Truth and the kids are singing a silly song, well, I want to pick a propositional content that's silly and a way that's saying it that's silly and a musical form that's silly because we're supposed to be silly. On the other hand, if we're at a wedding, you know, a serious, noble, joyful occasion, we're not going to use a lyric that's silly or communicates silliness, right? I mean, I'm being obvious and silly, but the point is we've got to ask questions of appropriateness then too. And we'll do this more specifically next week. Now, so we've got the first level of meaning is what does the text say by itself? The second level of meaning is how is the text put together and what does that communicate? And now we get to the third level of meaning that is the level that I'm going to call associative meaning. Meaning that comes merely through association. So let me give you an example. When you hear this tune, what kinds of feelings do come to your mind? Bum ba bum 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 ba bum 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 bum. What does it communicate to you? Pride, patriotism, solemnity. Now, why does it communicate that to you? Because it's our national anthem. It's associated with patriotism. It's associated with joy and pride in our country. Okay? Some meaning is just like that. It's just associative. But the question is, someone from China hears the national anthem. So he doesn't understand the words. He doesn't know what it's talking about. It's going to communicate something to him, but is it going to communicate pride and American nationalism? Patriotism in the United States of America? No, because it communicates that to us merely because it's association. So some levels of association are like broad for a whole culture, like the national anthem. Some levels of association are just for one individual. Like someone might hear Amazing Grace, and it may mean something very specific to him because that was his grandmother's favorite hymn, And that was sung at her funeral. And so it has a real deep meaning just for that one person. Is that a real meaning? Absolutely. But it's a meaning of association. You may have that meaning, but the person next to you might not, because you don't have the same experiences. You don't have the same associations. We, because of our backgrounds and where we hear a certain thing and what we associate it with, it may carry certain meanings for us. Now, this level of meaning only matters in our evaluation of music if two things are true. Number one, sometimes association is a shadow of intrinsic meaning. And we're going to talk about intrinsic meaning in a moment. But the point is, sometimes what something is associated, something is a certain kind of music is associated with a certain thing because it fits, because that music is really intrinsically communicating something that fits with that. So I would say, for instance, with a national anthem, although someone from China or France or Germany won't hear, you know, Pride in America, they will hear stateliness, majestic, joy. You know, those are intrinsic meanings, which we'll talk about in a minute. So sometimes associations are, things are associated with a certain thing because they intrinsically mean that. Let me give you just an example, and we're not going to get into specifics yet. We'll do this next week. But just an example. Just because a certain style of music is associated with, say, a bar lifestyle, just because it is associated with that doesn't make it wrong. But the fact that a certain kind of music is always used in a setting like that where unbiblical kinds of things are going on may, not necessarily, but it should give us at least question, may be because that music intrinsically communicates messages that fit with that lifestyle. So it should, it doesn't always, but it should at least give us question to evaluate it further. Did I give the illustration last week about the Nazi national anthem and all that? I did, didn't I? Yeah. So there's an example of, there was an association, dum bum 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 ba da bum. For a long time, people associated that with terrible Nazism, not because of anything intrinsic in the music itself, merely because that was the tune that was used for the Nazi anthem. So there's an example of something that, where there was an association, but it didn't necessarily make it wrong, because if you evaluate the actual meaning of the music, it wasn't there. So we need to, at least, if a certain kind of music is associated, is just naturally, when you hear that music, when anybody hears that music, it's naturally associated with a sinful kind of living, we at least need to say, all right, I need to at least evaluate it then, because there may be a reason for that association. Association only matters, number one, if it's a shadow of intrinsic meaning, or number two, if the association carries a negative cultural meaning right now. So, for instance, if we were living right near World War II, I wouldn't use that tune. Even though it's a good tune, I wouldn't use it, because some people who lived through that, it might be a real stumbling block for them. So, but otherwise, you know, we got to go beyond the association and ask, what does the music mean? That gets us then to our final level of meaning. And this is the hardest one to get, so we're going to spend our last 15 minutes here. The deepest level of meaning is intrinsic meaning. By intrinsic, I mean that the very nature of the music itself carries meaning. The meaning is not because of the text, so we can take the text away now. It's not because of the text, it's not because of associations, it's not because of culture. Now, a certain text may be set to that tune because of intrinsic meaning. It may have associations because of that meaning, but it's not because of that. The form of the music itself holds meaning. Now, how does it do that? Well, let me give you some examples that you may be able to grasp a little quicker. The meaning exists intrinsically for the same reason that I might look at a tree and say, that tree is weeping. Like, you look at a weeping willow, and you say, that tree is weeping. Now, is it really weeping? Well, obviously not, right? But the way that it is shaped mimics what we feel or what we look like when we weep. Or, like, you look at a pug dog, and you say, that dog looks sad. Now, do dogs have emotions? No. I would say they have feelings, they feel, but it's not true emotion like humans have it or like God has it. But is the dog really sad? No, but the way that the physical features of the dog look like what we look like when we're sad, or they look like what we feel like when we sad. When we're sad, the droopiness of a weeping willow resembles the characteristics of someone who is downtrodden or depressed. The natural curvature of a pug's mouth resembles a frown. Those, the tree and the dog, don't actually possess emotion, but we describe them in terms of emotion because the meaning is communicated by resembling the physical characteristics inherently connected with the emotion. Let me read you a quote by a guy who's writing on this that's quite helpful here. Okay, so it's a lengthy quote, but I think it's worth reading because it helps us get our minds around this and connect it to music. Okay, listen carefully. For there are times when we can say that quite objectively, this expresses that. We can do that with regard to human facial expressions and gestures. So we can say, this facial expression expresses grief, or another one, jubilation, and so on. We know that this facial configuration expresses grief because when we feel grief, we behave the same way, and we have the same facial expressions. So let me stop here for a moment. What is he saying? He's saying, I can look at someone and know generally what they're feeling by just how their face is formed, because when I feel that way, I have the same kinds of expressions, right? Okay, continuing. When we feel joy or disturbance, we have other facial features, and this is quite objective. Everyone recognizes in general what facial features are expressive of what inner states. This is true across the board. No matter what culture, no matter what society, people feel the same way and express things the same way. Why? Because we all come from the same thing. We're all created by God. We have a common human culture. Beyond that, there's a lot of different cultural meanings within different cultures. But the deepest level, we share, because we're all humans. We share that culture. I continue. Tears go with sadness, smiles with gladness, and this is just an objective fact. Anyone who said that furrowed brows and menacing gestures were expressions of joy or relaxation would be wrong. So if I stand up here and go, I'm expressing joy and relaxation, you would say, you are wrong. And I would say, well, how do you know what I'm expressing? You would say, because that just doesn't fit. It's when people are relaxed or joyful, they do different things with their body. When they're mad or, you know, then they do this, right? How do you know that? Because we all share a common humanity. And when you feel a certain way, you just naturally act a certain way. I see this with Caleb all the time, right? No one has taught him to express emotions a certain way. As he grows, he's going to learn more and more. But there are certain ways that he expresses certain things because they just come out of him. He's a human, right? I'll continue. Now, if publicly observable facial features and gestures can be expressive, then why cannot publicly observable patterns of sound and colors also be so? So what he's saying is, if we can express certain things objectively through facial expressions or body movements or ways of visibly or movement, if we can objectively express things that way, then we can do the same thing through patterns of sound. Humans, all humans, no matter what culture, no matter your background, no matter where you come from, where you were born, your race, your gender, no matter what, all humans express primary general emotions such as happiness, sadness, fear, and anger with the same general kinds of outward observable manifestations. Any humans in any culture at any time are generally slow and downtrodden when they're sad, jittery and tense when you're afraid, fast and intense when angry. We all generally, there are differences because we have different personalities, whatever, but generally speaking, we express those same kinds of feelings in the same way. So really, We are all part of the same culture of humanity. We all share a common humanity, and we express certain things the same way because of that. Now, those kinds of universals break down when we get into the more into the higher emotions, like hope or anxiety or jealousy. Those we can't necessarily pin down. But general emotions, we all share, we all express the same way. So this, when, now let's get to music. When music orally, through sound patterns, reflects those same outward physical manifestations of human emotion, it can be said to express those emotions. So I'll give you an example. This is a quote from a guy named Boozma. He says, "Sad music has some of the characteristics of people who are sad. It is slow, not tripping. It is low, not tinkling. People who are sad move more slowly when they speak, and when they speak softly and low." So a composer will look at how people act and how people talk when they're sad and mimic that through the music. And that can then communicate the sadness. Music that orally reproduces those universal outward expressions then will universally communicate those emotions to which those manifestations are attached. In other words, if a certain piece of music is loud, fast, and intense, it's probably mimicking anger. Now, we can't get too simplistic here, and some people do. Some people will get real simplistic and try to pinpoint exactly, this means this and this means that. We got to take the whole picture. Okay, we can take a whole picture of what something is musically doing. Music is complex. So we have to take the melody, the tempo, the dynamics, the rhythm, and all of that and ask, what does it mean? Now, again, a musician, a person who knows music theory, who's got some background, can very specifically analyze the music and say, this means that because of these specific reasons. But you don't need a degree in music theory to get this. Why? Because it's communicating to us because that's how we feel. That's what we act like or how we feel inwardly or how we manifest it outwardly when we feel the same way. So you don't have to have a degree in music to know what music is communicating because it's like this. You walk up to someone and you can just tell that they're depressed. Well, how do you know? Can you put it into words necessarily? Well, you might be able to. Well, their facial expression or their tone of voice or the way that they're looking at me. But when it comes down to it, it's just you just know because you feel that same way when you're depressed. Or you walk up to someone and, boy, this person's excited about something. How do you know? Well, it's how they act. Well, music is just like that. Music is like being around a person because music communicates emotionally. When you're around music, you can discern what its meaning is just like you can discern what someone is feeling when you're around them. Now, you could misinterpret, and you can't get too specific. I mean, how do you know the difference between maybe, sadness, grief, depression? When you get real close, it's hard to determine. But generally speaking, you can do that. Now, sometimes people will say, this music communicates such and such, but when you listen to it, it just feels completely different. Here's some examples. Here's some quotes from some guys. No lullaby will work if yelled jerkily at a brisk rate, and no war march will have a desired effect if crooned mellifluously at a snail's pace. What is he saying? If I want to put Caleb to sleep, I'm not going to put on the radio, Why? Because I want something that's going to communicate relaxation and peace and quietness. What does that communicate? Happy, joyful. Or if we're getting ready for a war, we're not going to play na da 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 da. Why? Because the music doesn't fit. It's communicating something that doesn't fit with the particular circumstance. Another guy says loud, fast music is arousing, while soft, slow music is soothing. Why? Because soft, slow people are soothing, and loud, fast people are arousing. If I'm trying to get you roused about something, I'm not going to say, let's all get very excited about this. You should be roused about what I'm telling you. No, I mean, I'm going to speak with rousing tones. Well, it's the exact same kind of thing with music. Another guy says, if someone were to insist that a fast, sprightly waltz were really sad or melancholy, we would refer him to the behavioral aspects of sad people and show him that when people are in that state, they do exhibit the qualities in question, the qualities of sad music, rather than speed or sprightliness. So if we have some speedy, sprightly thing and someone says, oh, that's sad music, we would say, no, it's not. Sad people don't act that way. Even the Bible tells us this kind of thing and tells us about music's power to express emotions, which is what we're talking about. Music has power to mimic human emotions and therefore communicate those same emotions to us. Let me give you some examples. I won't have you turn there, but you can jot these down. These are helpful illustrations. For instance, Job 30, verse 31 says this, "My harp is tuned to mourning," M-O-U-R. "My flute is tuned to the sound of wailing." So what is Job saying? He's saying that the sounds that his harp, the music that he was playing, and evidently there's no words here to the music intrinsically was communicating a sound of mourning because he was distressed. The flute that was playing was what sounded like wailing. Okay? Isaiah 16:11, "My heart laments for Moab like a harp." In other words, he's saying the sounds that he has in his mind of a harp playing sound like what his heart was feeling when he was lamenting for Moab. I was listening to a guy speaking on music recently, and he was saying he loves, you know, he doesn't like to watch a lot of horror movies, but he'll be flipping through the channel sometimes, and when he comes to one, he likes to do it when his wife is there because, you know, there you see a girl, you know, out in the daisies, you know, picking flowers, and the music you hear is bum 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 bum, you know, and his wife's like, "Turn it, turn it." And he's like, "What? It's just daisies and you know, it's just a nice girl." And she's like, "No, but something's coming," you know. Music communicates that suspense. You know, people who say music communicates nothing, I'm like, "Hello," you know. What is the whole purpose of movies without a music? My dad, inevitably, when we watch a movie, will say, "Now, what would the scene be without music?" You know, because it really communicates, and the music fits what's going on and often enhances what's going on. Here's another verse. Again, Jeremiah 48:36, very similar. "So my heart laments for Moab like a flute." So the sounds that the flutes were making sound like what his heart were feeling like. "It laments like a flute for the men of Kir-Hareseth." So again, this idea of music intrinsically communicating certain sounds that touch the heart, that sound like what my heart feels like when I feel a certain way. And that's how music can communicate to us. Our common experience, we've already talked about some of our experiences, our common experience attests to this. There have been tons of studies done by department stores or restaurants because they know that when they play a certain kind of music, it encourages shopping or it encourages eating because it makes you happy and aggressive and, you know, maybe carefree. I mean, they do studies on this. I have a whole journal article here, "Mood, Music, and Marketing," in the Journal of Marketing. And the whole point is, he goes through this whole thing of how certain kinds of music communicate certain things that encourage shopping. Because so some of you ladies don't realize when you're, you know, throwing that plastic out there, it's because they're playing certain music. You know, you can blame it on that. Now, we're going to apply this specifically next week, but one more example and we'll be done. I've got some CDs. One's called Power Classics. It's intended to be used for when you're working out, you know. Well, why don't they have Brahms' Lullaby on there? Or why don't they have something soft and soothing? Because they put music on there that intrinsically communicates. You know, someone might say, well, that doesn't communicate that to me. They wouldn't say that because it's fast, it's rousing, it's energetic, so it obviously communicates that. Or I've got one CD called the Ultimate Relaxation CD. Well, what kinds of things are they going to put on there? Things that intrinsically communicate relaxation. Now, we've got to keep in mind the associations. Maybe in my childhood, I was kidnapped, and my kidnapper played Brahms' Lullaby every night. So now when I hear Brahms' Lullaby,
I get all tense.
Well, is it intrinsically doing that to me? No, it's association. It's associative. So that is definitely something to consider. Associations are something we have to take into account. But at the bottom line, music communicates universally in this general way. Now, when we try to get real specific, that's when it gets hairy. And we'll make some of that application next week. You know, it's very hard to say this music means X. Because the minute we do that, we're putting it to words. And like I said, talking about music is like dancing about architecture. Music goes beyond words. We're talking about things that can't adequately be put into words. But as Christians, because we're concerned that every single one of our choices be pleasing to the Lord, because all of life is worship, that everything is beneficial, everything brings glory to God, nothing is going to cause someone to stumble, nothing is going to control us, we need to be willing to ask these kinds of questions, ask these kinds of important questions about what our music communicates.